I'm pleased this morning to present Mr. Gene Shepherd, author, radio personality, and actor. Mr. Shepherd has authored two best-selling books, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash, and Wanda Hickey's Night of Golden Memories and Other Disasters, both of which are now used in American Lit courses in many universities around the country. Mr. Shepherd has performed to sell-out crowds in Carnegie Hall, and his television show, Gene Shepherd's America, is one of the most successful series ever produced on PBS Network. In addition to the PBS series, Mr. Shepherd authored The Phantom of the Open Hearth, which starred James Broderick. Mr. Shepherd has enjoyed a successful career in the all-pervasive medium of radio. His talk show, aired by radio station WOR, is one of the most popular and highly rated shows in New York and across the country. Boy, I'll tell you, you love the audience here this morning. His performing career also included successful roles in several New York plays. He appeared in Arthur Kopitz's Asylum, co-starring George Segal and Estelle Parsons, and has starred in the title role in the play Destry. Most recently, he authored a screenplay for the 1983 film A Christmas Story, which was based on the book In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. He's currently working on a sequel to this film. He will be a special guest this afternoon, right after this, at a brown bag luncheon sponsored by the CLSC Alumni Association in front of Alumni Hall, and will be participating in an autograph session at 1:30 at the bookstore. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in a warm Chautauqua welcome for Gene Shepherd.
Thank you, Joe. I'll get this. You know, this is a Radio Shack model, and Joe made it himself. So if I get feedback, you'll know why. Well, now, before I begin, you have to understand that almost all of my work has been done in the dead of night. In fact, the term night people came out of one of my radio shows that I did. It actually came out. You can't hear? Oh, for heaven's sake. All I'm saying is that almost all of my work has been done in the dead of night. 2 o'clock in the morning, squinting into a microphone. I write my stage plays at 4 a.m. I worked on A Christmas Story at 3 o'clock in the morning in Nome, Alaska, pacing up and down in a motel. And all of a sudden, here I am. It's bright sunshine. I haven't seen sunshine in 9 years. Didn't know they had it anymore. Here it is. At Chautauqua. And all you people are sitting out there bright and cheerful. I'll bet some of you people were up before 9 o'clock. Scary, I tell you. So this makes me very, I'll be honest with you, it makes me very insecure. Because day people are different from night people. First of all, day people believe in luncheons. With a capital L, I might add. They make phone calls all morning to arrange the lunch. Whereas night people only eat. They stop by Horn and Hard Art, grab a hot dog and move on. So here I am looking at a crowd of day people. You are the natural enemy to my work. Of course, this whole crowd looks to me like a crowd of people who read, seriously read, the Reader's Digest. And by God, quote it. Very scary. Most of my short stories have just, if you remember, they all appeared in Playboy. How many of you remember at Playboy? No, there's a lot of bravado in the audience here. A lot of lying going on. It's not easy to read Playboy. So here I am at the crack of dawn. So before I do anything else, I want to hear a round of welcome love. Let's hear it. And then I'll go. Three. Oh, Lord. Well, I think as my text today, friends, how I discovered God is the midst of a complex quadratic equation in Algebra 3. Even that, or I can take as my text the time little orphan Annie really did it to me. In fact, I think that's what I'll do. I was asked just before I came on, Mr. Shepherd, how did you become a humorist? Now that's one of those unanswerable questions. It's like walking up to you and saying, how did you become a biped? It just sort of happened. I mean, one day I was walking around there, you know, instead of crawling, and I was a biped. That's no excuse. It's a work to become a biped. There are so many quadrupeds among us. Squirrels. That crowd never made it. You ever seen anything dumber than a Pomeranian? Little things on its head. There's not a single Pomeranian that knows how to deal with algebra. You do, right? I'll bet. God, I remember as a kid, how did I become a humorist? Well, I'll tell you, Joe. Suddenly waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning and finding myself speaking to the Chautauquans. That's a startling experience. Looking out of my window at the little house that I'm staying in, I've never been to Chautauqua, and getting the distinct impression that I'm in Oz. Let's hear it for Oz. Come on, let's hear it. And what's more interesting, I'm not only in Oz, but I'm in the land of the Winkies, which is a province of Oz, where everybody always smiled and thought clean thoughts. I mean, you didn't even have the guts to be a munchkin, for God's sake. That was another province, by the way, if you don't know Oz. And of course, the Emerald City. I had the feeling the Yellow Brick Road is right down here past the administration building. And here I am now, being asked how I became a humorist. Well, it's a complex story. Like all stories of human depravity. Didn't start overnight. Does evil pop out full blown? No, it creeps up in the night. How long has it been since you tried evil? You people are always against it. You ought to try it once. You ought to try it. Or haven't you ever been asked? That's the sad fact of life. You read about these things that people are having, you know, and they're being arrested. 24 arrested in giant raid on 12th Street. And you feel a vague sense of envy. Some are laughing. Others are wondering what's funny. But truly good. God, I envy you. Who think nothing but clean thoughts perpetually. It's not easy for me, you see, because as a kid, I came from Indiana. Now, I'll tell you something about Indiana if you don't know anything about it. Indiana is a state nobody voluntarily goes to. I mean, how long has it been since you've heard anyone say, I'm going to spend my 2 weeks this year in Indianapolis, by God. It's a scary thought, spending your 2 weeks in Monon, Indiana, watching the trucks put gas in their tanks. Going out and taking pictures of it with your Instamatic. Sending postcards back. Souvenir of the YMCA of Fort Wayne. and the little cross where your room is overlooks the railroad switchyards. Got a clear view of the McDonald's from here. That's Indiana. In fact, I remember as a kid, you know, I didn't know this. When you're a kid, you just live where you live, you know, and Indiana was Indiana. But I began to suspect things weren't like other people knew, because the old man used to love to get up on the Indiana Turnpike late at night in our Oldsmobile. And by the way, he was an Oldsmobile like other people are Baptists. He was an Oldsmobile man. He believed in Oldsmobiles. You came in at 3 o'clock in the morning and shook my old man. He's sound asleep. He said, quick, what are you? I'm an Oldsmobile man, Oldsman. He wouldn't say, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Protestant. I'm an Oldsman. And he believed in Oldsmobiles. And we get in the Olds, by the way, always fourth, third-hand Olds, maybe fifth-hand. We get in the Olds, and we go up on the Indiana Turnpike on a Saturday night, going for a thing they don't do anymore. They used to have a thing they called going for a ride. Do you remember going for a ride? I mean, really boring if you're a kid, you know. You're squatting in the back seat. My mother would sit in the front seat of the Olds, you know, and she has her hair up because, you know, it's just a ride. She have her hair up in these aluminum rheostats. As a kid, I, you know, and she'd move, you know, when you sit in the back seat of the Olds, and she's got her hair up in these rheostats, she'd move her head a little bit, and you could hear the wind coming in through the cracked ventilator. And it would go through her rheostat, you'd hear, she'd turn her head and it would go. It was a Greek primal cry. And the old man is hanging out the window. He's a Chicago White Sox fan. Now, for those of you who do not know the significance of being a Chicago White Sox fan, I'll have to point out to you that at the time my father was my father, and I'm 8, 7 generations had passed, and the White Sox had never emerged from second division in the American League. I mean, generation after generation of not defeat, nothing. Defeat means you almost got there. These were the guys that you never hear of, way down at the bottom, the cannon fodder for the Yankees. When it said Lou Gehrig went 14 for 17 this week, it was off the White Sox. So the old man, you see, had this look in the eye of a guy who every morning got up and read the Chicago Tribune, a mean paper. Colonel McCormick ran that paper. They had editorials, hard, mean. And the Chicago Tribune every morning would bring the old man the bad news. Sox dropped 2 to Cleveland every morning at breakfast. And I remember him sitting there drinking his black coffee. He used to drink his coffee black, and he used to say to my mother, he used to say, if somehow you can get the beans in there, I'll chew them. He said, why do they grind this stuff up? I like to chew it. Drinking black coffee. Had anything to wake up in the morning. In Indiana, we lived in a steel mill town in Indiana, by the way, not Norman Rockwell's Indiana. This is the Indiana where all along the horizon with our mountain range, the steel mills, belching smoke to the skies. Over here is the Sinclair Refinery. And by the way, in this plant, the Sinclair Refinery, they made something called Flip. It was the DDT of the day. And every afternoon they'd start up the Flip plant, and the stuff would float up in the air, and millions of dead mosquitoes would come down. They'd drift down like rain. The old man would walk out on the porch and say, that's one of the good things about living here, you don't have to buy Flip. Now that's pragmatism, that's working with your problems. And every morning he'd pick up the paper and it would say, Sox drop pair to Cleveland. And a typical Chicago White Sox headline, a victory, would be Luke Appling pulls 400-foot tape measure foul. Now, if you're not a sports fan, you will not realize the significance of that futility. What's the foul ball, Ma? The old man saw plenty. That's what the White Sox hit. And it would open up, the piece would open up and say, Luke Appling threw a scare into the Detroit hurler, Eldon Auker, today when he smashed a 400-foot foul ball over the left field wall before popping out in the second inning. Now, that was the best shot that the Sox had had all week. That was why it was in the story. So here's the old man. Every Saturday night, he'd say, let's go for a ride. You didn't think I'd get back to that, did you? I weave a supple web, friends. Like life itself, it's a tangled mess. Have you ever suspected your real life hasn't begun yet? And that you're just sort of fooling around? The others know where they're going. They look so official and walk around. And you just sort of, you know. That's in high school. There's always some kid in your class that says, I am going to be a doctor. And there you are. What are you going to be? You don't even know whether you're going to be a person. You're going to be a doctor. Well, we'd go for a ride. We'd get up on the Indiana Turnpike. And there'd be cars ahead of us. The old man's driving the Oldsmobile. And it always had bad valves. You'd hear, and smoke would come up out of the floorboards. You ever had a car that had a perpetual bad muffler? And it goes, and when you talk, you say, hey, how are we going to turn here? It just vibrating, everything vibrating. My mother's rheostats would be going, ding, 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 ding. Oh, we're driving along. The old man is hanging out the window with his White Sox fans t-shirt. I am a White Sox fan. Never shaved on Saturday, and he's carrying on a steady undercurrent of the most magnificent, beautifully controlled, just perfect composition, like any true artist. He worked in his canvas with infinite delicacy. His medium was obscenity. And he's just muttering away at the other drivers. The horizon, the transmission. My mother would sit there above it all, and you'd hear, woo. That was her statement. My kid brother squatting here next to me always sat on my left, and his medium was the wine. He whined for 7 consecutive years. And his wine would rise and fall depending on the time of the day, like the tide. His nose would run. God, life is sickening, isn't it? If it only was better. Don't you wish you didn't know about things like that? And so there I am, a kid, see, sitting on this side. I'm studying the scene, not knowing it. And the big moment would be, my old man would say, hey, look, 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 there's a car from New Jersey. And you see that New Jersey plate go by? He's come from the estate east, where all the wonderful, and then once in a while, a great moment would happen, a New York car would go by. That's where Fred Astaire was always dancing on pianos in the movies. My mother would sit and look at those license plates going away into the darkness, heading east. And then we'd make the big interchange out by Griffith, Indiana, and head back. And then we'd get the superb, supreme treat of our ride. We'd see California cars. California. Hollywood. Where it's always warm. Palm trees. In Indiana, one year, one summer, the temperature did not go below 138. And one that same winter, it didn't get above 36 below. So our life was real in earnest. The White Sox were losing. Smoke was coming up out of the floorboards of the Olds. And I'm a little kid going to the Warren G. Harding School. Can you imagine? Already at the age of 8, I'm going to a school named after the worst president in history. And we didn't know it. It was just a Warren G. Harding School. Here we go there every day. Of course, it's the worst until, you know, there's been several sins. I'm sure there's some poor little kid going to the Richard M. Mason School. He doesn't know, you know. He doesn't know anything about what went on. That history, that's ancient, like U.S. Grant and all that stuff. And only later in his life, he's going to realize how he was blighted. Like me, other kids were going to the Lincoln School. Yeah, we had a Lincoln School right down the street. The Washington School, George Washington. I was going to the Warren G. Harding School. And we had an auditorium. I was a kid, I didn't understand it. We had this great, you know, in the auditorium, we had this great curtain, and above it was the school symbol in gold, you know, gold lame woven by one of the ladies of the PTA. It was a teapot dome. And little dollar signs came out of it, see? We didn't know. We just sat there, you know, let me just said, in hoc agricola conk, in es spittle lauk. They are very big on Latin in Indiana, very big. Which means don't spit on the farmer, actually. Agricola conk. Good advice if you go to Indiana. And there are the kids, see, sitting in this class every day. Now, I must explain something to you. My name is S. Everything in life is alphabetical. And I'm way back in the class. Way back. I am in the alphabetical ghetto. With the S's and the W's and the Z's and the Y's and Chester Wisniewski and Helen Weathers. We couldn't see. We couldn't hear. By the way, all of education sounds to me like one sound that goes. Then once in a while, you'd hear Miss Shields go. And you couldn't hear, and hands kept going up and down in the front of the class. They were the kids getting educated. The rest of us were learning about life. And so when you sit in the back of a class, you know, all the time, you just see all of life as a whole crowd of people ahead of you. And their hands are always going up, and they have these bright, clean faces, and they get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. They jog in later life, eat wheat germ, they go for yogurt, and all the rest of us sitting in the back are eating powerhouse candy bars. It's all you got in the back there. And I remember the great fear that would hit us in the back there, in the alphabetical ghetto, was the one because we didn't hear, you see. We didn't see the board. It was just sort of a thing way off in the distance. And Miss Shields was this tall, thin lady who wore a purple dress and had a blue Brillo pad on her head. The way she looked to me, her hair was a blue Brillo pad. She had these rimless glasses. She was the kind of teacher who would cry when she read Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy to us. This really got her, the camel with the wrinkled knees. We're just in the back there, see? There was fear always in the back of the class. fear. It was fear of two things. One, A, of being called on. That you had no knowledge of what was going on all these months up there. So every one of us developed our own technique on how not to be called on. Schwartz, for example, who was off to my right always, Schwartz, you notice the ass there. Schwartz was 4 feet two. So Schwartz, instantly, he'd get into school, he'd start sinking. Till eventually you just see this little top of the head. He was impossible to see from the front of the class. Helen Weathers, the only girl in our alphabetical ghetto, wore her hair like a football helmet. Helen Weathers, about 5 feet one, 250. She's squat. And Helen Weathers could sweat at will. So there was always a kind of haze around her. It was a zen disguise like I've ever seen. She just let it go, see? And Miss Shields would look back and she'd see this gray, fuzzy haze back there. This hell up. She never could see her exactly. And the minute the class would start, my technique was fantastic. How many of you tried this and have used it successfully? I always kept a line of kids between me and the teacher. I'd move like a snake. Moving always. She never could see me, see? And of course, every 15 minutes when her voice would stop, we would know that we're safe. I would look out and go, she'd say, oh, there's that cute shepherd boy. That's how I got a straight B all the way through. That cute look. One thing came through, though. I will remember this. Education is strange. It's like a blueberry muffin. Sometimes you can eat half the muffin and not get a blueberry. Flying out. Look at your education. Have you ever really looked at it, what you really know? Scary. And suddenly one day in the middle of second grade, out of the haze up there in front, this I distinctly heard Miss Shields say, Olivia, expose skin. And that is the sum total of my grade school education. And I have used it to great advantage since. Education is to be used. It is a tool for success. Right, gang? Right. So I keep that nugget. It's the only thing I know about the world. And I use it carefully. For example, I'm at a cocktail party in the middle of Manhattan's fashionable East Side. Here's Gloria Steinem over here. She's Steineming. She's doing her thing. Her glasses are gleaming and she's smiling. And over here's Norman Mailer. He's kvetching. They're all doing the thing. See, so I walk very carefully around. I say nothing with my martini. Keep my knees loose, you know. You'd be amazed how many reputations for great wisdom are based on total silence. And then I hear a big discussion going on here. It's about the international monetary situation. These two guys are arguing it out. Here's Mailer. Here's John Schlesinger. And it's heavy stuff. A rich humus of trivial data is being exchanged. I say nothing, I join the group. There's a pause while someone is waiting to regroup his thoughts, and I simply say, but none of you have considered the tin economy of Bolivia. There's a stunned silence. I leave then quickly. You have to get out of there fast. The New York Times has called me to comment on Bolivia. Now, said, well, of course, when you're dealing with a tin economy, you're dealing with difficult situations. And the Times writes it down. Shepherd, oblivion expert yesterday, says, that came out of Miss Shields. One of my secret fears is that one day I'm going to go to Bolivia and find out that it's rubber. They don't make tin at all there. I don't know. I don't want to go there. And so there I am in the Warren G. Harding School. And you know, there's a great American myth. Many of you probably are part of that myth. And that is that each succeeding generation is superior to the one that went before it. How many of you say, yes, but they're smarter than we ever were at that age? Baloney. This is known as the Detroit complex. That the 81 model must be better than the 79. And the 84 has to be better than the 83 in spite of the tinfoil hood. The balsa wood transmission. Many of you probably believe the human being is perfectible like the Ford. Well, you've seen how perfect the Ford has become. Blowing up in the dark. I had a Pontiac one night, sitting out in the garage at night, used to eat gas with the key off. I'd hear it sucking it up and grazing out there. Perfectible, my eye. Human beings have always been the same and always will be the same. And so I used to go home. My father was part of that American myth that his kids were smarter than he was when he was a kid. Many of you believe this is a fact. What is this guy saying? It was true in my day. So I remember the old man squatting at the kitchen table one morning. I'm home from school, it's Saturday, and he's with my Uncle Carl. My Uncle Carl had dentures. And his big trick was to push his dentures out and bite his salami sandwich out there. You see why I'm a humorous now? You grow up with this? That's not easy to do. Take your dentures and reach out and bite a salami sandwich. And actually take a bite out of it. Then the teeth come back in. That's not easy. Hell of a trick. So Uncle Carl is sitting there with his teeth going out, and then the old man is drinking a can of Blast beer, which was a great Chicago beer of the period. Blast, well-named beer. He's in his t-shirt. White Sox are taking on the Yankees this afternoon in a pair, and you know where that was going to go. And I come walking in the kitchen, and the old man says, how you doing at school? Remember this moment clearly. He says, what are you learning at school? And I stand there. Bolivia exports tin. The old man's amazed. Uncle Carl pulls his teeth in. The old man says, Jesus, they didn't have Bolivia when I was a kid. Boy, kids are smart, aren't they? And I didn't believe it. See, that's the terrible tragedy that we all fall into, is believing that we, in fact, are smart. Because others have imagined that you are. Terrible, terrible trap to fall into. And so I went through sixth grade, seventh grade, ducking and bobbing in the back there in the aqua, never getting anything less than a B because I had this cute smile. I arrived at eighth grade, graduated with a straight B average. Never once called on. That is true accomplishment. That summer, you remember the summer before you went to high school? All of you did it. You were going into another plane of existence. High school was a big high school where I went to school. 3,000 kids, and it was 5 miles away. It stretched a block this way and a block back and had four stories. It was nothing like the Warren G. Harding School. And so me and Schwartz, Casper Wisniewski, deep in the alphabetical ghetto, Zinsmeister, Z-Y-N-Z. Can you imagine how Zinsmeister sees the world? It's a long line of people.
And whatever they're getting up there, they'll run out by the time he gets there. Did you know that the AMA, incidentally, the AMA has found, and this is one of those, and you're going to think this is a funny bit, but it's true, a strange statistical fact that people in the last one-third of the alphabet live on average 12 years shorter than those at the other end. You're laughing. All those people named Abbott, Costello, Mr. Watson was thinking about that back there. He's noting twinges in the knee already. But this is true. And why? There's a constant gnawing fear. As they called down the alphabet. In the army, it was hell. Good God, I was in the army. And always, guys were getting shipped to brief places.
The following men will prepare for shipment to Palm Beach. Abbott, Costello, Baker, Dog.
And you're at the bottom, and they start running out of gas. And they stop at the L's. All by the alphabet. Have you noticed? There's a Johnny Carson show. A Steve Allen show. Yes. There is John Chancellor. There is no Chester Wisniewski show. Because he has always seen himself as way in the back of an audience. From the day he went to school, Johnny Carson was right in the front row, his hand up, making smart remarks. And those behind him, the Z's and the Y's, were just ducking and bobbing. And so there I am, see, all through that summer. I go through that summer. It was fantastic. I said to myself, I am going to stop this. This is new. I'm going into school, at the high school. It's going to be great. Because there were kids in my neighborhood that went to high school. And they were tall. And they had letters. And they were going to something official. High school. One word, high school. And it was so exciting. And it was that Elysian summer between true kidhood and the beginning of all the trouble. The beginning, the onset of adulthood. And me and Schwartz would go out and play tennis down at the park, and we'd knock out fly balls. And all the while, I'm saying to myself, when I go to high school, it's going to be different. I'm not going to fake it. I'm going to learn. If the other kids can do it, I can do it. I was beginning to worry. And so, one bright July day, I got in the mail my registration card. It was blue. It said, Miss Jean Shepherd. I hadn't even gone to high school. The damn thing was starting already. It's Miss Jean Shepherd. Enrolled in college preparatory. Here is your schedule for your upcoming classes beginning September 6th at 8 a.m. And all these classes were listed. Miss Jean Shepherd. I figured, well, I'll get that fixed. And the day arrived, and I am planning, I am going to go straight. I'm going to L-E-A-R-N, learn. No more of this faking. And there at the top of my card, it told the name of the homeroom teacher. How many of you remember your homeroom teacher? That was some home, wasn't it? My advisor, Miss Flora Snyder. Great name. And I had no idea who she was. And so that very first day, I stood out in front of high school waiting. You remember when the tradition was on the first day of school, you got dressed up? I had my Sears Roebuck sport coat. I had my Tom McGann shoes that I thought were great. It had Scotch plaid laces. I had a DA haircut all combed. You know, I was ready for school. And they used to have these going back to school sales, and my mother went to them all the time. You know, going back to school, great values, tablets, all kinds of stuff. And my mother, for some reason, bought me a protractor. was on sale. It was a Donald Duck protractor. And it was sticking out of there. I was ready. You know, you never know when you may have to protract something, you know. I don't know what the hell it was, but I had it. See, so I was all ready for school. So I had my stuff ready, and I had my blue card, and I'm waiting out there, and this is a vast throng of kids. I didn't see Schwartz, Flick, none of my friends. I was in another world. But then exactly at 8 a.m., boom, the doors opened, and my life began, and I charged in. Thousands of kids roaring into the high school, and I couldn't believe some of the girls, and they were big women. They had bumps all over them. Just not like Esther Jane, this little human bowling ball that lived next to me. Boom, we go in, and I'm starting my new career. It's a new plateau, and one of the great American myths is that they can change themselves. Oh, if you believe this. Only America do they buy books on how to sex, for example. Can you imagine a camel being told how to do this? But Americans believe if they get the book, they will achieve happiness by reading. And they will be transformed. No other society believes in the magic transformation. We all believe this. And I believed that I was going to change my life. And so it says, room 207. Miss Flora Snyder, my mind is working like a steel trap. Has to be on a second floor. I charge up, and sure enough, there's 201, 206, 207. And I look in, and there, sitting at a stainless steel gray desk, in a stainless steel gray dress, with stainless steel gray hair, stainless steel glasses, and she had the most beautiful stainless steel, thin, evil Heinrich Himmler smile. Was Miss Flora Snyder. 4 years I would spend with Miss Snyder. I walked in, I'm going to start out new, and I put my card. She doesn't even look up. She looks down at the card. Ah, Miss Shepherd. She says, but this is a girl's name. How many of you thought you were going to hear a nice lady author who played the guitar this morning and wrote books about rabbits and things? I bet there's a few here. So she said, that's a girl's name. I refuse to call you Jean. That's obviously a nickname. You will be Eugene. Shepherd, well, you'll be in the back. So I got back and I squatted in the back of the class, but that's not going to stop me. This is a whole new world. I've got my protractor ready. And sitting ahead of me, just to the right and ahead a bit, because the rose went back and started to curl up, was Wally Simba. For 7 years an all-state guard at Hammond High under various names. My first true experience with the genuine professional jock. Wally Zimba sat there like a mountain of flesh. He had probably a size 28 neck, size 3.5 hat. Well, oh boy, anybody that could block the way Simba could block, he didn't have to have any head. What he needed was a pointed projectile for endurance. And Simba, by the way, later went on to play, incidentally, with the Green Bay Packers, but this time he was just, you know, fooling around in high school. And it was the first time I had ever met a real athlete. I remember walking past him. It was funny, I could smell this. It was the first time I smelled the true primal. He had this aroma about him of ancient dinosaurs. Wasn't unpleasant, it was just thought-provoking.
At this time, please stop your machine and turn your cassette over for the continuation of this program.
My first true experience with the genuine professional jock. Wally Zimba sat there like a mountain of flesh. He had probably a size 28 neck. Size 3.5 hat. Well, oh boy, anybody that could block the way Zimba could block, he didn't have to have any head. What he needed was a pointed projectile. And Zimba, by the way, later went on to play, incidentally, with the Green Bay Packers, but this time he was just, you know, fooling around in high school. And it was the first time I had ever met a real athlete. I remember walking past him. It was funny. I could smell this. It was the first time I smelled the true primal. He had this aroma about him of ancient dinosaurs. Wasn't unpleasant. It was just thought-provoking. Snuffling in the dark and eating weeds. You could see Zimba out at night grazing. And he didn't have nostrils. He had blowholes. You could hear his hissing breath, and he's sitting there. And I felt really comforting back of him. For 4 years, he sat in front of me. Before he went to Notre Dame for another 12 years. Joined the Bears at the end of his illustrious career, I might add. Went to the Packers later. But there I'm sitting, waiting for the first moment in my high school education to begin. Miss Flora Snyder stepped to the front of the class and said something which has remained in my mind ever since. I sometimes hear it at 3 a.m. in my apartment in the village. I live in the village. My hobby, by the way, in the village is killing cockroaches. I have a 7-pound presentation cockroach I killed one night on my wall. Stuffed. Beautiful cockroach. It was a male. Charged me from under the sink. Got him with rage just as he was about to hit. So there I am, squatting in the back there. That got to her. She's known a few cockroaches, that one. Others have never honestly seen one. But there I am, sitting in the back there. Wally Zimba is over here. I'm the only one of my old alphabetical ghetto in this new room. This is a bunch of strangers. When Miss Flora Snyder made the following statement. Boys and girls, and particularly you freshmen, what you do here in this school will be with you the rest of your lives. We keep records. Remember this. What you do here will affect all of your future life. And I'm sitting back there waiting. And there was a little tiny knot of fear began to form right here above my clavicle. And that little knot of fear said, good God, they're serious here. But I was going to rise above it. I'm going to go and go. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, and out we go. It's time for my first class. Do you remember your first high school class? I charged out into the hall, and the first class was listed as number 105, room 105, Mr. Pittenger. I'd never had a male teacher before. And the class, I had never heard of it. I had never heard of what this class was. But I took it, you know how kids take things for granted? Well, that's what they do in high school. They studied it in high school, whatever the hell this is. And so I charge down to room 105, and the kids are going in, and I see in the crowd, Schwartz, there's Helen. There's Chester Wisniewski. My little alphabetical ghetto is all charging into the future together. We go moving in there, and here's Mr. Pittenger standing up there. He had gray jowls, black hair, black rimmed glasses, square face. And he took our cards and he said, this is alphabetical seating.
Shepard Schwartz, you're back there by the cabinet. Wisniewski, you're just out in the hall, just to the left. Zinsmeister, you're back there with the coats around the room there.
We went back and sat, and I could see Schwartz. He was quiet. We're saying nothing. Chester Wisniewski is saying nothing. This is a whole new ballgame. Kellen Weathers has a clean pair of overalls on. He's going straight. We go back and take our seats. And then Mr. Pittenger began the class. And I had decided what I was going to do. Because I had noticed that all the people that are really smart do it. I was going to take notes. How many of you have been mystified by note takers all of your life? Those official people that sit there endlessly writing. No matter what the hell's going on, they write. So I figured there was something to this secret. Girls particularly do this writing business. So I had my Redman tablet, you know, the one with the Indian on the front, with the blue lines inside, you know. And I had my number two Ticonderoga pencil. Schwartz, by the way, loved to eat them. Schwartz would go through three or four Ticonderogas in a day. Like cigars, you know, he'd work up to the eraser, and the eraser was dessert. Well, you see, he used to eat paint in art class. He'd sit back there, he'd eat the... We had a girl that ate rubber bands, I'll tell you. That must have been exciting at night. So anyway, there I am, a kid, see? And I'm going to do this, see, and I got my pencil out, and Mr. Pittenger's got the blackboard up here, see, and we're way the hell in the back again, don't forget. And Pittenger says, all right, so boys and girls, the name of this class, students, we're going to begin by defining what our study will be this semester. A-L-G-E-B-R-A. He clears his throat and I write down brack brack. Never know what's going to come up on those damn exams. You never know. And I write down algebra. I never heard the word before. Algebra is a... his eraser and he leaves a little part of the E. How many times have you sat in a class with a little piece of a letter up there and you want to go up and say, I want to erase it, get rid of it? It's like sitting across from somebody who's a very serious person all night and they've got mayonnaise in their whiskers. Algebra is a system of... Algebra is a system of abstract, and then he wrote the word mathematics. Algebra is a system of abstract mathematics, and I write it down. Everybody in the class is leaning forward, waiting. He says, I will now give you an example. X plus 2y equals... Y equals 2. Half of the damn hands went up. I can see Schwartz looking around in terror. You ever had the feeling that the rest of the class has already taken it? Give me the value of X. I can feel terrible thunderbolt of sudden realization. The class was 2.5 minutes old, and I was 8 weeks behind. How the hell do you add X's and Y's? I was having trouble with threes and twos. And already the smartasses in the front, their hands are going up and down. They're up on the board doing equations. What the hell is this? There was only one thing I knew that I could do. I started to do it. I began to move like a snake. I heard Schwartz. It was the first time I ever heard this. Schwartz goes, aah! It was a primal cry of fear I was to hear from Schwartz for 4 years. Aah! And I could hear in the back. I glance back and I see him. There's Chester Wisniewski, who was Catholic. His beads are going. You could hear him go. He was asking and hoping for divine intervention somehow. The alphabetical ghetto was back in business with a vengeance. And somehow, you know, we're all creatures of instinct. I knew this was one course you could not ad-lib. Instinctively, I had been able to fake everything in school. You know, I could take one line out of a book and write a whole book review. Never read it.
On page 22, when Mr. Hawthorne refers to Quequog the Indian, it is quite obvious.
That's called blowing smoke in the academe, in the groves of learning. You do not ad-lib a quadratic equation. It's like pregnancy. You either are or you ain't. You either got it or you don't. And they were getting it, see. And so the next class, I walked out sober. Not a fear growing in my gut, because I knew now they would discover at home what a fake I was. And they would question whether Bolivia does export tin. I was going to fail. First time in my life. And weeks went by. Every day I'd come to the algebra class, and Mr. Pittenger was one of these progressive teachers. He did not give daily exams, and he used to say, if you care to do the assignment, that is entirely up to you. You will learn algebra if you do the assignment, which is on the board every day here. We will have a blue book exam at the end of the semester. And it was approaching. Now it is Christmas. I'm dead. I'm going to fail. Christmas time, I can remember looking at my kid brother, who was still in grade school, and thinking how innocent, how young, how pleased he was with the rubber dagger he got for Christmas. And I knew that somehow I would not live to see my 21st birthday. How many of you have had that feeling? And if you did, you'd probably be blind. Then they'd be sorry. So it was a tragic Christmas. I pretended to dig everything I got. Because right after Christmas, in January, was the semester exam. And sure enough, I went back to school. And I knew it was over. And then came that day, late in January. Those days that they get occasionally in Indiana when things are warm. Suddenly you have a 60-degree day, you know, that kind of day. And out in the darkness out there while I'm sitting in the classroom in algebra, and Mr. Pittenger's up in the front going, blah, 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 and the hands are going up and down, and I'm moving instinctively. And I could hear the beads clicking behind me. It was just another day. But I knew that the next day we were taking the exam. It would all be over. I hear somebody kicking a football, boonk, out there in that beautiful, soft, warm winter summer day. And the girls' glee club was singing down in the gym. Can you bake a cherry pie, darling Billy?
I can bake a cherry pie. You're the apple of my eye.
Really a stupid song, isn't it? Glee clubs sing that all the time, and I could hear it out there, and it was just one of those soft days with 3 minutes into the end of the class, I made a classic guerrilla mistake. Don't forget, I was fighting a jungle war back there in the ghetto. A classic gorilla mistake. I lost my concentration.
Boonk. Come bake a cherry pie. Dolly, Billy.
And I began to drift off. And I saw the sun coming down through the Venetian blinds. And there were two or three little motes of dust drifting like butterflies.
And you bake a cherry pie. You're the apple of my eye.
Blah, 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 blah. Without any warning, blah, 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 Shepherd.
Shepherd, I have never heard my name uttered in anger in a classroom. In actual combat. Shepherd.
I looked up at the front of the room and Pittenger said, yes. Shepherd, give us the value of C in this equation.
Oh. Look over here, and Helen Weathers has got a great big tool around her. And I can see whatever, I don't know how the hell Wisniewski did it. He disappeared. God had reached out and removed him. Fear struck the alphabetical ghetto.
Well, now, over the years, I have planned many different escape hatches like that. Would you please repeat the question?
Yes.
Shepherd, give us the value of C.
Well, that one's gone.
In every other class, I used to be able to say things like, well, it depends on whether you take the psychological or the economic side. That doesn't work with the value of C. So I started to walk forward. 3 minutes into the class, I walked forward through my peers, my friends. I got up to the blackboard. I looked back down, and it was then that I learned one of the first lessons, terrible lessons, a true lesson that you hardly ever learn in school, but I learned it in school, a true lesson about life. There was Schwartz, my friend, my fellow victim. He's sitting back there. He's grinning. He loves it. Oh, yes, there's nothing a phony likes better than to see another one caught. He's grinning. I knew then that we have no friends in life. Just passing ships in the night. And when you fall off the cliff, they'll say, well, he really screwed up this time. Not me. And they'll stride on. And I looked up at that. It was the first equation I'd actually seen. I couldn't believe what it looked like. It was rich and thick. It stretched for maybe 8-9 feet across the board. It had brackets, umlauts, little things that went up like that, little tiny twos, little lines under it with zeros with -2. What the hell is all this? It was covered a thick humus, a compost heap of X's and Y's. And all over it, there was a big squiggly line that went over. I know what the hell that was. And, you know, you have moments of insight when you're really at the extreme. There was an equal sign at the end of all this. I knew what that was, and it said equal zero. And it hit me, all this crap equals nothing. What the hell is this? And Pittenger looked me right in the eye and said, give me the value of C. And there, buried like a little tiny blueberry in this great muffin of a double-barreled, multifaceted, triple quadratic equation, was one tiny C. I look at it, and I look at Mr. Pittenger. I'm playing it very cool. A gorilla, when captured, never shows emotions. You're waiting for your moment to escape. I look in Pittenger's eye, and I saw the look in his eye that said one thing clearly. Now I have got you, you little bastard. I've been waiting all semester. And he saw his moment, and he just took that harpoon, poised, caught me right in the thorax. And there I am. Spread eagle like a butterfly, with my wings fluttering. He's looking cool at me. The value of C. Well, and I guess this is the point of all of this. Up to that very moment in life, I had been one of the leading atheists. I mean, you know, there was the little group of wise guys at the Warren G. Harding School that was, not the Sunday school, that business walking on water. That's for old ladies, you know, all this business of who believes in miracles. I was one of the enlightened atheists. Now, friends, fellow sufferers on this yellow brick road of life, I am not sure. Because of what happened at that moment, I looked at the equation, and there was Schwartz sitting down there. And I hear in the distance, "You can bake a cherry pie like Billy." Boom. When suddenly it just sort of came out of the beam of light, out of the dust, out of the moat that floated endlessly, like the Brownian movement of fate and time. Oh, that's good stuff. Woody Allen doesn't do stuff like that. Suddenly out of this void, it came to me, and I found it coming out of my mouth. It was amazing. I said distinctly, C is equal to 3. You staggered back. How the hell do you know? Schwartz's mouth dropped. It was a miracle. C was equal to 3. And I hit the ground running. I looked him right in the eye. I says, "I used empirical means, Pitt." How'd I go? Leave when you're ahead. It was a miracle. At that lunchtime, I was walking 10 feet tall. I remember walking down to the igloo where we ate lunch, me and Schwartz and Flick. I see Esther Jane Albury pointing me out on the street. There goes Gene Shepherd, the algebra king. He doesn't say much in class, but he makes it count. And I'm walking tall, 10 feet, savoring my only victory. The miracle. There's nothing more delightful than an undeserved victory. I'm walking along, and Schwartz is skulking beside me. We get to the igloo. I'm outside there, and I say, "Schwartz, my treat today. Popsicles, whatever, double stick popsicles. Pineapple grape, if you want." And Schwartz looked at me, and he says, "Listen, you phony." I says, "Phony? Well, Schwartz, what do you mean, phony?" I'm sprinkling a little salt there in the wound. I know what it's about, and I'm rubbing the pepper in there in his lacerated shoulder, Shepherd's victory. He says, "You phony, you know what you can do with your double stick popsicles. I mean, including the sticks." I says, why do you say that? "Phony." He says, "You bastard, you studied?" So friends, that is how I discovered God in the algebra class. Thank you. Thank you.